The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. We'll keep you updated on the New Zealand terrorist attack. That's what the Prime Minister is calling it. 40 now, at least 40 dead and 20 injured. The attack at two different mosques in a city that's Christchurch, New Zealand.
Right.
Third largest city, I guess.
Third largest city in New Zealand, right. And it's on the east coast of the Southern Island, right about in the center of that coastline. This happened about 1:30 p.m. local time. It's evening there now, Friday evening there, the local hospital is reporting that they're treating 48 people with injuries related to this incident, and most of those are gunshot wounds in various degrees of minor injuries to more serious injuries. We're certainly monitoring the situation and have been all night long, and we expect that there's going to be another update here in just a few minutes, as the authorities have been giving us updates about every 5 to 10 minutes on this story. But again, they say they had four gunmen at two different mosques there in this town of about 400,000. That's roughly the population, a little over 400,000 in Christchurch, walk into two different mosques. Near one of the mosques, there was a march going on that involved children. And there were, of course, nearby schools that were in lockdown. The Christchurch school was in lockdown for quite some time. And police also were asking everyone to stay in their homes. That lockdown of that church has ended, and they have given the all clear. They also said earlier there could be other people that were associated with the planning of this, or even the carrying out of this, but they don't know just yet because they still have to do the investigation. Again, four people in custody, three men and one woman.
And here we go already. AOC being slammed. This from Fox. She's being criticized because she slammed those expressing thoughts and prayers for the victims of Friday's mass shooting in New Zealand, reacting to remarks made by the New Zealand Prime Minister, who she took to Twitter and invoked other mass shootings that took places in houses of worship. At first, I thought of saying, imagine being told your house of faith isn't safe anymore, but I couldn't say imagine because of Charleston, Pittsburgh, Sutherland Springs. What good are your thoughts and prayers when they don't even keep the pews safe?
Wow.
That sparked plenty of backlash on social media because she tweeted it, even from Muslims. Here's one. This is incredibly insensitive to my Muslim brothers and sisters who were slain in cold blood while they were literally praying because they want to be closer to their creator and they want to become better people. Just a variety of ones that were out there. Lots of people. Another response, Christian, Jews, Buddhists, Hindus, Muslims are lifting our Muslim brothers and sisters up in prayer thought. We are praying for the victims and their families and are praying for the strength to make a better world. Prayer unites, prayer heals, prayer is good. These are all responses to Ocasio-Cortez. Yes, the one way to show empathy for people murdered at their place of worship is to mock prayer. Mm. That was another response to Ocasio-Cortez. Mm. And, you know, when you think about it, if you're not going to say something positive when something happens like this, you're going to be accused of taking political advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially somebody who is in elected office, a lawmaker, saying something like that. Also seeing a story that came out, I'm sure you saw this, in her district, in Omar's district,
I have it right here.
They're looking to find a challenger, primary challenger, and she's just 2 months in.
From thehill.com, some Minnesota Democrats upset at controversial comments made by Representative Ilhan Omar are taking initial steps to recruit a candidate to run against her in next year's primary election, seeking to buck history in one of the nation's most progressive legislative districts. These are Democrats now. Several party leaders said they've had discussions about finding a candidate to take on Omar just 2 months into her first term in Congress. But even those who were deeply offended by her comments about Israel concede they have not yet found anyone to challenge her. There's definitely some buzz going on about it, but it's more of a buzz of anyone talking about finding someone to run against her than it is anyone saying they are going to run against her or contemplate it. There's definitely talk about people wanting someone to run against her, said State Senator Ron Latz, a Democrat who represents, that's a state senator who represents a portion of Omar's district.
Yeah.
We'll see what, well, I guess we'll see what happens there. Said the executive director of the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota and the Dakotas, our community is exasperated by Representative Omar's unfulfilled promises to listen and learn from Jewish constituents while seemingly simultaneously finding another opportunity to make an anti-Semitic remark and insult our community. Omar met with Stephen Hunges, the executive director, last month after her initial remarks received widespread condemnation. She has continued to meet with Jewish leaders both in Minneapolis and Washington, a spokesperson said. Unfortunately, having the opportunity to speak with her about that point did not dissuade her from making that statement. We were appalled. Some Democrats are eyeing Bobby Joe Champion, a state senator who has served in the legislature for a decade. Others are hoping to entice Minneapolis City Councilwoman Andrea Jenkins, the first openly transgender African-American woman elected to public office in the United States. I'd be uncomfortable right now. Hang on one second here. I just lost it here. I'd be pretty uncomfortable supporting Representative Omar right now, given what I've learned about her since the election and given her apparent inability to stop insulting Jews, said Latz, who represents the city of St. Louis Park, home to the largest Jewish population, and who supported Omar's chief rival in the 2018 Democratic primary. But finding a challenger to take on Omar is a difficult prospect, according to thehill.com. No House Democrat from Minnesota has ever lost a bid for renomination, according to the University of Minnesota political scientist Eric Ostermeyer, author of Smart Politics Blog. Only two House members from Minnesota have ever lost primaries, most recently, more than a century ago. While she has created a significant amount of controversy for herself and said things that have offended many Americans, I'm not sure that one could make the case that she is in trouble yet. But the fact that the talk is already there.
Well, yeah.
And I, by the way, I don't expect her to stop.
No. I really don't. I think that she feels empowered. And I think if she lost next year, this wouldn't be the last we hear of her. The same with Ocasio-Cortez. They're not going to go away. You could easily see Omar on MSNBC, right? And she could be a contributor. If she's not already. Ocasio-Cortez, same thing. You're not going to shut them down. Now, you may say, we don't want them in office, we don't want them in power, but at some point, I think you could make the case that Omar and Ocasio-Cortez easily have more power than they did when they won their elections.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a small thing, because now
not 2 months into it,
right? And you can burn out. It could burn out and go away. But for right now, they're stronger. Each of them are stronger than they've ever been. So if they can't win their district, just say they're both challenged and lose.
They'll run for president.
They'll run for president. They'll run for Senate. They'll run anywhere they can, and if they don't hold office, doesn't matter. You know, this is the when you don't respect, I guess, the process. When you don't respect the foundation of the country, you're not going to respect, I guess, how you get that influence over others. They don't respect the process.
If Ocasio-Cortez lost, she would be on MSNBC.
Oh, there's no doubt.
At least a weekend show.
And then you would have what? Rallies? Alyssa Milano, please. She is so February 2019. No, it will be Omar Ocasio-Cortez. And at some point, when you gain that kind of attention, then you run for a bigger office.
Did you see the tweet from Alyssa Milano? I think it was last weekend. I am gay. I am black.
Yeah, I am everything.
I am everything. She would ever. And
forgot. Yeah,
somebody
no,
said,
you're not.
You're nuts.
yeah, no, you're not. Well, but that's the remember the whole lion thing.
The lion thing.
I am Cecil.
I was trying to think of it the other day. I am Cecil. But yeah. No, you're not.
No, you're not Cecil.
You're not Cecil.
Shut up. You're not Cecil. See this? But this is what they have to do. It's always a constant battle to prove that I care more. Can you imagine being at a protest with those people wearing the shirt? I am Cecil. No, you're not. I'm Cecil. I said it first. Yeah, but I put the shirt on first.
I'm more Cecil than you are.
I'm more Cecil than you are. Meow.
Here it is. Just one headline. Twitter is dragging Alyssa Milano for calling herself trans and a person of color.
Right. Yeah, no, you're not.
Here it is. I found the tweet. I'm trans. I'm a person of color. I am an immigrant. I am a lesbian. I am a gay man.
No.
I am disabled. I am everything, and so are you.
Right. Responding, you know, to someone else. But no, you're not, because you haven't. See, she doesn't get it. Welcome to liberalism, Miss Milano, because the entire premise is that you didn't live this experience. Look, you can be an Olympic athlete. Then all of a sudden change genders. But the feminists are going to call you out because you didn't live your life as a woman. You didn't, and all these that you claim to be, Alyssa Milano, you're none of them.
Well, with Caitlyn, that was the most beautiful one where you just went, wow, the victims and oppressors are just evolving so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, we embraced you, but now you have conservative fiscal ideas?
Yeah.
Well, then you're not truly trans.
Right.
Because if you're trans, you can only have liberal fiscal ideas.
And feminists saying you can't be a woman because you didn't live your life as a woman.
Exactly. Well, but it started after after he was promoting all of his conservative ideas.
She didn't live her life. As someone who is disabled, she didn't live for Alyssa Milano. You didn't live your life as any of these individuals or groups that you say you're a part of.
I am Cecil. I'll never forget that. There was like,
well, but that's the battle. I've got to prove that I care more.
I'm Beanie. Remember Beanie and Cecil, the cartoon?
Oh,
no. Okay. You have to be my age.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say I missed that one.
Okay.
Was Cecil a lion in that one?
That joke fell flat completely.
Mm, yeah.
I am Beanie.
No. But that's what 2020 is going to be about on the left. I hate Trump more. No, you don't. I hate Trump.
It is going to be fun. Well, Andrew Yang has upped it now.
Right.
He's running because. Disenfranchised whites are going to be killing Chinese.
Right.
He said it.
Because there's a new Cold War with China.
Right.
That's just bizarre.
That's where we're going. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Winter times can be tough on trucks. Cold temperatures and other weather-related elements can cause excessive damage to your truck's electrical system, an essential part of the performance and maintenance of the vehicle. Remember, since you're using your lights for longer periods of time, your alternator is working overtime. Once your engine starts, the alternator takes control of the electrical system and supplies the demand. This makes it more important to test your alternator output, as well as your cables, connections, and more. Including an electrical system check in your preventive maintenance routine can help ensure this component of your truck is prepared to take on the rest of winter. Stop in to a TA truck service and get your electrical system inspected today to help prevent future repairs.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Welcome and good morning. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, Robert Francis O'Rourke is in. We'll get to that. I just have to read the first paragraph here. Can I have this?
Sure.
Fox News article.
All right.
Alfredo Ortiz from Fox News. Ocasio-Cortez again proves she's clueless on economics. This week, she exposed her economic ignorance when she argued that bankers should be liable for borrowers' mistakes.
Yeah.
During Capitol Hill testimony from the Wells Fargo CEO, she contended that if in the event of an oil spill on the Dakota Access Pipeline, which Wells Fargo helped finance, the bank should be held responsible. When she asked it to the CEO of Wells Fargo why they shouldn't be responsible, he said, because we don't operate the project. We provide financing to the company that operates the pipeline. And then he writes, this is getting embarrassing.
Well, it's at some point, It someone's going to say, okay, stop the madness. That the people on the right that are criticizing her aren't wrong. Because there has to be a debate. When you're at South by Southwest, people are cheering you. Most of those people are drunk. I'm just saying. When it's, you know, it's kind of like spring break.
The highly intellectual may go and drink exotic coffee and pay that one-time fee, which is like $1,500 or $2,000, to go to all the in events, mm-hmm. which she was one of the in events.
Yeah, and they serve a lot of drinks there. So, and it's not coffee. Let's be clear. It's spring break. Come on.
Well, Bailey's.
Yeah. Bailey's. Straight, they're doing Bailey's shots. No, but it's when you're in that friendly territory, that's one thing. Now have the debate. Don't have the debate with the right. Have the debate with Anderson Cooper. Well, she already had it, actually, with, was it Jake Tapper or was it Chris Cuomo on CNN? And one of them was asking her, well, how do you pay for it? Would you just pay for it?
Yeah.
There was no follow-up to that. But on the debate stage, there's going to be a follow-up. She can't debate because she's clueless. She has no idea what she's talking about on the fundamentals. None. None. She tries to draw a line from this to that, and it makes zero sense at all. And that whole Wells Fargo line of questioning was a perfect example of that. How do you think she's going to perform on a debate stage? She's not.
But does she think she won that?
Oh, yeah, I think she does. Okay. Yeah.
.com.
They didn't cheat on their SATs, but only because their parents were broke. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning, and thanks so much for being here this morning. I think one of the stories that is boiling under the surface right now is the Lisa Page testimony, the Peter Strzok transcript that has come out this week, and the fact that now you know that there seems to be a dedicated effort from the Republican members of the Senate to investigate what happened in the 2016 election. Now that you have the Democrats moving off of Russia collusion and looking at Trump's finances, that's the direction they wish to go, and just ignoring, it seems, all the allegations over the last 2 years about Russian collusion. They may be stating things, as we've played from some Democrats over the last couple of days. Well, firing Comey was collusion. We all know it wasn't. They were claiming it's obstruction of justice. We all know that it's not obstruction of justice. That has even gone by the wayside, and now it's, let's look into his finances and see what we can get. But the Senate, led by the Republicans, seems serious now that we know, and we are getting more from the actual words of the parties involved and what their testimony has been. And we're talking specifically the Peter Strzok testimony that came out yesterday that said, no, the Department of Justice kept the FBI from looking at emails on the Clinton Foundation that Hillary had in the server in her home. And they wanted to look at him, but the Department of Justice made a deal with Hillary's lawyers not to look at those. The reason that you would look at everything is because the FBI believed, as we now know from Lisa Page, that the FBI believed that she committed the gross negligence portion of the Espionage Act. She broke the Espionage Act law, is what she did, by putting the server in her home. The FBI believed that. We now know through Lisa Page that it was the Department of Justice that said, nope, sorry, can't go there. We won't prosecute, because that specific question was asked to Lisa Page. Are you saying that the prosecutors were making the point that don't go forward with this because we're the prosecutors and we will not prosecute on this? And she said, quote, that is correct. Which brings us now into the entire point, was Comey lying?
Right.
That was brought up with Bill Hemmer, with Senator John Kennedy, the Republican from Louisiana, on Wednesday. Let's hear part of that conversation.
I'm going to play for you a moment, July of 2016. Here's James Comey when he ran the FBI. Watch.
I know there will be intense public debate in the wake of this recommendation, as there was throughout the investigation. What I can assure the American people is that this investigation was done honestly, competently, and independently. No outside influence of any kind was brought to bear.
Now we have the indication that DOJ perhaps said take a knee on this one, Senator. What's the truth in this?
I don't know, Bill, but we better find out. I mean, this is just disgusting. 99% of the men and women at the FBI and at Justice are good people, but you've got a small minority over there, or you did, maybe you still do. Most of them appear to be anti-Trump, though I'm sure there's some that are anti-Clinton. But they want to act on their political beliefs. And then they want to go out and sell books. I listened to Andy McCabe on Sunday. You know, he acts like butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. He, This guy is trying to sell a book. Everybody forgets he was fired from lying to the FBI and getting involved in politics. And now this with Lisa Page. Look, these people have hurt badly the premier law enforcement agency in all of human history. And we're going to have to work really hard to build back the reputation of the FBI, because it is a well-deserved good reputation for most of the agents there.
Is it your sense that Bob Mueller's trying to wrestle with this, quite
I
literally?
I hope so. And if he doesn't, I hope that Chairman Graham, the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, will. We've got to lance this boil.
All right. Now, Bill Hemmer mentioned exactly what you have said. Do you have any idea if Mueller's looking into this? And we've asked this all along. And if you've been a longtime listener to the show, you know that we've been on this whole narrative that if Mueller, if his goal was to find out if Trump colluded with the Russians, first to hack the election, then to, you know, to hack the actual voting machines, right. Then it morphed into hacking the computers of the DNC, and then it became that he colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. So whatever it was, did Trump collude with the Russians in some way?
Right.
Is what it was. Even if it wasn't a crime, you're supposed to go and find out. Well, if you're Robert Mueller, as we said, the first thing that I would look at, if you have an investigator's mind, is, okay, where is the most evidence that exists? Take all of your biases out of it, okay? Take all your biases out of it. If you're Robert Mueller and you're just the investigator's mind, and you say, I've been given this job to investigate whether Trump colluded with the Russians to do something with the election. I don't know what, but to do something with the election. Where would that immediately lead you? The only place it could lead you is where everybody believed the most evidence existed. And that was the fact that the FBI got a secret warrant from the secret court to spy on the Trump campaign. And in order to do that, they had to present evidence to get a secret warrant. Mm. Well, if I'm looking for the evidence to go after Trump at, isn't that where the evidence or the best evidence exists, because that came directly from the FBI and the Department of Justice and was used to get a secret warrant?
There's nobody even disputing that. Those are just the known facts that we have that have, you know, through this entire thing, have become public.
Before you ever get to Mueller.
Right.
Before you ever get to Manafort, or before you ever get to Cohen, before you get to any of it, the first thing you're looking at,
you get to Carter Page, really. I mean, you have to find out how they got to Carter Page.
Right. You have to find out where's the most information that exists. What's out there in the media? Well, Trump colluded with the Russians because that's how they got the warrant. They got the warrant because of the dossier. And so your whole point then would be, okay, well, if you went in that direction as Robert Mueller, and that's why when Bill Hemmer asked that question, I said, whoa, he's the first one I've heard in the media that has made that reference, as we have made so many times. Mm-hmm. That's where you'd be headed if you have an investigative mindset. If you're actually looking for what you were told your job is to look at this. Well, it would lead you right there, which would then take you where? Well, is the information credible? So you'd be backtracking. You'd be going all the way back to what? You'd be going to Christopher Steele. Yeah. You'd be trying to find out the sources of who he talked to in Russia, whether it's credible or not. And then you would find out, as the special prosecutor, it wasn't credible. So you're looking for any crimes related to part of your investigation. What would the one crime be right there? The intelligence was, well, opposition research was labeled as intelligence, that it was actually a fraud. Isn't that where that word where it would lead you?
Yes.
And then the other point that it would lead you, through Carter Page all the way backtrack to where the money came from the Hillary campaign, correct? And campaign finance violation for that money being filtered through the Hillary campaign and the DNC, through the law firm, to the opposition research firm, to the former British spy, Christopher Steele, who was a foreign national, and campaign money being filtered to a foreign national, which is against campaign finance laws at that point. But then the other direction it would lead you is to what they did with that information and what they did once they got the FISA warrant, all the unmasking that was done, it would take you to the other side. So when Bill Hemmer said that, I went, oh, my God, somebody's finally on that. Is Mueller on that? Because wouldn't it take you in that direction if that is what you were told that your job is to do? Your job is to find out if Trump colluded with the Russians, and the first place it would take you would be the dossier and the FISA warrant application. And at that point, you're going to find a ton of inconsistencies and things I believe to be concerned about as to what the FBI and the Department of Justice was actually doing.
Well, and you can't have any thorough investigation without starting from the beginning. And where did it start? Exactly where we pointed to. And there is an entire chain of events, known events, not even being disputed, that would have to be the foundation of this investigation.
I'm just glad that somebody else is finally on that.
Yes.
That he actually asked that question, which means he's thinking the same thing.
Right.
If he's thinking it, why aren't all Republicans out every day saying, why didn't this lead right here to the FISA warrant? If you're looking for what he did wrong, this is what if you're looking for what Trump really did wrong, the biggest allegation that he colluded with the Russians, if you truly want to find out what happened, that's the direction you would go in first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that there might not be other directions that you would go in, but first, as an investigator, you'd say, where's the evidence? FISA warrant. Oh, they were able to get in and spy on the Trump campaign. All right. Where'd they get that information from?
Right. Where did this all begin? Because if it were, every bit of it were legitimate, and you could show that, then you would there wouldn't be any question. But there's already question from the beginning. Look, it's not even with it's not even with the investigation itself. You don't even have to be sitting there in Mueller's office and be one of these investigators to know these things. These are facts right now that are known and not being disputed. Did anybody discount the Lisa Page testimony?
Nobody. Not even Comey. Comey, except for commenting yesterday or late last night on the Republican senators and the national security vote.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't tweeted anything since March 4th.
He's been
completely quiet.
So then you go to her boyfriend, Peter Strzok, his testimony that was released. Anybody so far, and I know it's kind of early, but so far nobody has come out and said, look, he's wrong, he's a liar.
Comey has been very quick to respond.
Well, exactly. And look at how much energy they put into defending Peter Strzok during his open testimony.
Yep.
Remember that. He's telling the truth. He's angry because, you know, Trump was wrong. He's angry because, and they built him up. So behind closed doors, now would anybody try on the left to make him a liar with his testimony behind closed doors?
That's a
dangerous place to go. Lisa Page, still nothing. No one's saying, oh, no, it didn't happen that way. No one. No one's disputing the facts, saying, forget about calling her a liar, just saying, no, we believe she's incorrect.
Where are the attacks on Lindsey Graham?
Right.
He's been loud this past week.
Yes,
I've heard nothing.
Right.
Is he being treated like Devin Nunes was?
Right.
The same accusations being thrown that way? Why not?
And by the way, thank you, Lindsey Graham, for answering our question that we've had for a long time about the inspector general. We suspected that's what was going on, and Lindsey Graham told us.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
As far as I'm advised, currently in custody, were not on security watch lists.
That's New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern saying at least 40 people are dead after an attack on two mosques in the city of Christchurch, New Zealand. Prime Minister has said more than 20 people also were seriously injured during the shootings. A man who claimed responsibility for the shootings said in a manifesto that he was an Australian who came to New Zealand to plan and train for the attack. We'll have more information on this coming up following the top of the hour.
But the police there in Christchurch also saying in the last hour or so that only one of the vehicles had explosive devices attached to it. It had been reported that a couple of vehicles were found with explosive devices. And again, Christchurch being a town of about 404,000, but nonetheless, it's still the third largest city there in New Zealand. And there were some also, there were some controlled explosions going off in Auckland. Authorities had to be careful and clarify that those controlled explosions in Auckland were not related to these attacks.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. In the news today, an update on the number of those killed in the well-planned, the quote, well-planned terrorist attack in New Zealand at two mosques. Fox News reporting 49 people have been killed and dozens injured in the two mosques in New Zealand. The New Zealand police said four people, three men and one woman, were in custody in connection with the attack. Investigators later defused an improvised explosive device that was found inside a vehicle. Other reports still stating that a number of improvised explosive devices were found. Fox still reporting that.
And that update on the number of people who have died came from New Zealand Police Commissioner Mike Bush. He also said that the vast majority, 41 of those people, were actually killed during that attack on the Dean's Avenue mosque shooting. So far one man has been charged, and area hospitals say they are still treating dozens of injured.
And they say the suspects, one principal, two associates, and one person not directly connected to the attacks. Here is the Prime Minister of New Zealand.
We are a proud nation of more than 200 ethnicities, 160 languages. And amongst that diversity, we share common values. And the one that we place the currency on right now and tonight is our compassion and the support for the community of those directly affected by this tragedy. And secondly, the strongest possible condemnation of the ideology of the people who did this.
I know that according to some of our some of the correspondents out there that I saw from Westwood One News that they're reporting that the terrorists did live stream it and they actually witness and have seen the live stream.
According to CNN as well, an account believed to belong to one of the attackers featured a link to an 87-page manifesto filled with anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim ideas and explanations prior to the attack. Of course, that's likely what was behind the Prime Minister's words there. They are now treating this, earlier officials calling it, they're treating this as a terrorist attack.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison confirmed that one of the detainees was a 28-year-old white Australian-born citizen. He described the suspect as an extremist, right-wing, violent terrorist. Even though, from what we were told from New Zealand, none of those that were arrested, including the who they say is the principal of this all, was on any terrorist watch list.
Right, yeah. And we don't know why that would be. Yeah. But they're, again, what they're talking about here is an anti-Muslim type terrorist.
Police were also working to remove an unconfirmed video that circulated online showing the Australian suspect entering the mosque and firing multiple shots at people inside. He claimed responsibility for the shooting and reportedly published the anti-immigrant manifesto prior to the killings. He wrote that he traveled to the island nation to train and commit the attack. Now, I don't know if the two are related. I don't know if they have confirmed that that manifesto from that man is actually the suspect that they have.
What they're saying is that they believe that an account, a social media account, right, that is related to one of the shooters, that account is what linked to that 87-page manifesto.
In one video frame, the suspect is seen driving to the mosque with what appeared to be several semi-automatic weapons inside the vehicle.
Right. All of this started about 1:30 p.m. Local time on Friday afternoon there in New Zealand. It is now late in the evening. And in New Zealand, Christchurch is the third largest city in New Zealand, and it's on the southern island on the east coast, right in the center of that coastline.
Meanwhile, in other news, a dozen Senate Republicans joined Democrats yesterday to say no to President Trump's emergency declaration at the southern border. On social media yesterday, Eric, there was a lot going, you know, back and forth about it, that you're betraying the president and all this. And you and I said, look, this was decided. We knew what was going to happen here a couple of weeks ago. We knew the president wasn't going to get the votes for it. There was no surprise by this. We've gone through the entire scenario and broken it down point by point by point by point.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand both sides of this issue. It's easily understood. I have said what I would do if I was a judge or if I was a senator on this, and I've given my own personal feelings looking at the Constitution, you know, what it's all about. But there are two sides. The one side is the president believes this is a national emergency and should be solved. The other side is, well, you may feel it's a national emergency, but we as Congress, under the Constitution, we are the ones that by how we act and the legislation that we put forward, we are the ones that get to allocate the money. You get to do it in an acute situation where Congress has not acted. Congress has acted here or hasn't acted, but they have done it. It's Congress. If you believe they have not reacted to the national emergency like you believe that they should have, and we don't think that they have, by the way, just so you know, our personal feelings on it. Still, Congress is the one who is responsible as elected representatives to answer to the people. And so they believe that they get to make this decision. This isn't an acute situation like a war or a national emergency, but the president has fought back and said, nope, wait a minute. Look at what's happened over the last 5 months. It's unprecedented what's going on. Mm-hmm. I believe that the new statistics coming out in the last 10 days has really helped the president. And as we have said, if I'm a judge, I'm probably going to look at this and say, yeah, I see. I can understand why Congress is saying that the president has overstepped his bounds. Yep, I can see it. Because normally the president should only act here, 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 here. All right, you've got a point. Is there a problem at the border? Yeah, there surely is. Can I see the president thinking that this is an emergency? Yeah. Has he overstepped his bounds? Yeah, I think he might have. But you know something? There's a huge gray area here, and I'm a judge, and I'm not going to make this decision. You two fight it out. Congress will say, but we get to do it. Yeah, but apparently not all of you agree on that because you haven't voted to override his veto. You don't have the votes. So that's how the system works. If Congress has the votes to override it, they do it. If they don't, they don't. Sorry, the system is set up this way. And so the president gets to do this. He gets to call the state of emergency. But as you and I have said on the particulars of what is in, not state of emergency, what is in that national emergency, well, we may disagree with him down the line on that. You and I have often said that the president, if it comes to eminent domain or confiscation of property, may find the courts, you know, would find the courts, I know, with us, would view that as a different case.
Yeah, right. And there are cases already based on that eminent domain. And so you could see the Supreme Court say that we're not going to get into the business, and nor should we get into the business of defining what a national emergency is. And the president has the right to declare a national emergency. What he does about it could be two separate things, actually. They could say, well, no, in order after declaring the national emergency, he's going to need the cooperation of Congress to get that money. So he can declare the national emergency, and that's within his right. But he doesn't get to reallocate funds, and the administration would, in court, have to show how they justified moving those funds. And then beyond that, they could come back, of course, on the eminent domain things and on those items and say, all right, we're talking about the confiscation of property here and what you do about that national emergency, how you handle it, the measures after that become something different.
It's still going to be the courts where this is all worked out.
Yes, it's not going to
be. And by the way, the courts may not agree with how I would view as a federal judge.
Right. Here's what
And most likely, at least getting up to the Supreme Court, will not.
No. And I wonder, I mean, if this thing is still in the court, you get a big blue wave. No one said that yet, have they? Has anyone said the words blue wave? I haven't heard them say that about 2020 yet.
Well, we'll hear that today because Robert Francis is now in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it'd be a big blue wave.
Big blue wave.
All right,
big blue Texas wave.
There you go.
That's what it is.
So if just imagine if the if the Democrats, you know, got enough power, and this is how it would work. If they had enough votes for a veto-proof, if they had a veto-proof majority, they could once again vote on rescinding it. And if they got that through and the president vetoed it and they did a veto override, then that's part of the process too. And they would get to rescind it, and then the courts wouldn't really have a say-so because it would be over.
And
that
as we've said,
by the way, January of 2021 or beyond, right. And that's a big, big if.
Well, the other thing is when it comes to executive orders, they're really nobody really has no party can claim purity or be principled on an executive order from a president, because what we find out is do presidents from both sides. Mm-hmm. Do they test the limits of executive power? Absolutely. Obama did it like crazy. That's why the Democrats, their opinion doesn't even matter because they're complete and total hypocrites on this. Right. But the fact is, the truth is, there is no real purity when it comes to executive privilege or executive orders. It really comes down to the political will of Congress. Presidents will overstep their bounds, and if Congress agrees with them, the majority of Congress, it stays. If the vast majority of Congress disagrees with them, it goes. Is it always based on strict constitutional interpretation by both parties? No.
No, it's not.
Should it be? Yes. But that's in a pure world, a pure constitutionalist world, and we know we don't really have that.
Yeah,
I mean, the effort is there. I mean, that's why you go through all the process and the push and pull and what we're going to see now with the court cases and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually the Constitution working. A few people have said this is a constitutional crisis. No, it's not.
No, it's not. It is not. There is a process in place, and if the president loses it in court, that's part of the process. If he has a partial victory in court and loses the other, you know, part of it being eminent domain or even the funding, then that, you know, again, that is part of the process. If there were a veto-proof majority, keep in mind you had some Republican defectors in the Senate. Just imagine that more of them were in play and voted to the point of a veto-proof majority. If that happened, that's part of the process. It doesn't matter whether I like it, dislike it, agree with those Republicans or disagree. It's part of the process. And it will be interesting because I think the president I don't believe he stepped out of his constitutional bounds. The court may differ and say, okay, in declaring the national emergency, he didn't. But in reallocating the funds, he did. Or in the separate cases of eminent domain, the federal government stepped out of bounds here.
Which is where we think the real problem will be.
I've said all along that I think eminent domain is going to be the problem here.
By the way, eminent domain confiscation, however the process right, sure. from the executive branch yeah. would play out.
Right, and that's it, is that what... how many different lawsuits, I guess? We know that public citizen-related lawsuits from Texas, the first being filed from landowners there. And you can see if they, you know, the more they move toward, you know, building the wall, the closer they get, you're going to have more and more lawsuits. Let's say the president won in court. And then you had a movement toward, you know, going in and building, you know, more wall. Well, if that's the case, you're going to see more landowners, likely. It happens with every case because even if they may not even be looking to have a constitutional argument or decision on their case, they may just be challenging the value of the land,
well,
fair market value.
Well, look, just thank goodness that it all happened yesterday where the president completely screwed up, the Republican senators completely screwed up, the Democratic senators completely screwed up, but don't worry, all will be good because Robert Francis O'Rourke announced his candidacy, and he will bring all parties together.
He's going to bring us together. We're all going to unite.
We're all going to unite together.
Yeah.
So everybody else stinks. Robert Francis is in there. He will save the universe.
Thank goodness.
I had to go beyond the world.
And when he becomes president, we're all going to get along. There won't be one troll on Twitter.
Talk radio will no longer be needed because we'll all be united.
No.
Well, and if we exist, we'll be singing Kumbaya.
That's right.
Every day.
That's right. Lots of hugs.
866-90-RED-EYE.
USDA is marking National Ag Day with a new website aimed at young people.
It is a platform to showcase the multitude of USDA youth programs. Each one of our agencies is doing some amazing youth programming and education work.
That was Youth Programs Coordinator Tori Powell.
We had so many great programs, but we didn't have a place for youth to go to that featured everything together. So youth that wanted to do an Ag Summer program had to go to AFIS website, or they want to do a Forest Service program, they had to go to a Forest Service website.
The new website is a one-stop shop that not only lists USDA's variety of programs, but also tells stories of how other people have used them.
And that, at the end of the day, is what we're trying to do with this website, is really spark some engagement and then help students figure out how to, like, take that engagement, take that spark, and do something creative with it.
The address for USDA's new Youth and Agriculture website is www.usda.gov/youth. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. In other news out there, North Korea is considering suspending nuclear talks with the United States, the vice foreign minister said on this morning, because this came out this morning on Friday, according to Russia's TASS news agency. North Korea has no intention to yield to the United States' demands or engage in negotiations of this kind. The foreign minister told a press conference in the North Korean capital. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is set to make an official announcement soon on his position regarding talks with the United States, the TASS news agency out of Russia reported. So we'll see where that goes and what the president's response will be. That wouldn't necessarily surprise me. We view this differently from the mainstream media, who view the president as a failure on this. We said no. He had a test to find out how far they would go. Now, how the president will be judged is where he goes from this point further if this story is true.
Here's your forecast.
Just a few light lingering snow flurries from Wednesday's massive storm that hit the Front Range of Colorado very hard into Wyoming and portions of Montana. Up and down I-25, things are clearing out. We had over 1,000 stranded motorists on Wednesday. The snow connected with the system is now along the Dakotas and Minnesota border. We'll see rain for mainly Wisconsin and in the Chicagoland area today. That'll extend all the way down toward New Orleans. And there is the likelihood along the front of seeing some intense thunderstorms today, especially in and around northern Ohio, where the low pressure becomes more intense. Tomorrow, things will be winding down from this system, but we will see rain for the mid-Atlantic and portions of New York City into Boston and New England. This late winter system has affected the U.S. from Montana to New Mexico and everyone eastward. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Bona Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. All right, now, over the last couple of days, we have talked about Robert Francis O'Rourke running for president of the United States. Now, I know the White House called him Robert Francis when they asked about Beto. Now, we have referred to him as Robert Francis for the longest time because we believe that your proper first name should be used if you're running for any major elected office. So,
right, yes.
So,
tell
Robert,
the people who you really are.
Look, Robert Francis announced, and we read you a couple of we read the one article from Slate.com that was extremely negative, and said, "Why is he running? He's got nothing. He stands for nothing. Nobody has any idea. He won't even." He doesn't talk in specifics. He doesn't even talk in generalities about what he might do. And they were very critical. And we brought that to you. Earlier today, we brought to you Piers Morgan. Yes, another liberal who just said Beto was a loser. That's the headline of his op-ed piece today. Beto was a loser. So we can't be all negative even from the left. We have to bring you Mr. Positive and company. So who's going to be positive to the point of absurdity? Of course, Chris Matthews from MSNBC.
Tingly.
It looks like there may be some tingling going on here. Are you ready?
All right.
Here we go.
Look, I'm a little lighthearted today because I like this field. It's got a new levity to it. But let's talk about this hand thing. Because Trump has got the weirdest gestures I've ever seen. He's got everything. He does Jesus and he does everything. He's got the hand up like this. He's got this like this. And here he is making fun.
He's just...
He's that lively.
Extremely authentic. He's just an extraordinary guy.
But being kinetic like that, there was I watched him on the campaign trail. I think it's part of his appeal. I think that liveliness, that physicality, that outdoorsiness seems to work with people.
Absolutely. I think so, too.
I think it's not just that. It's his words. Because I didn't see it, Chris. I was listening to it on the radio, and it was...
Today
words,
in the video.
Today, yes. It was the words that he used as well. He had a way of speaking inspirationally, but also really seriously laying out the stakes of inaction and, you know, what could happen if the current administration goes in the current trajectory, for example, with global warming. He was very serious and spoke, you know, in a way that I think connected with people. And he had a lot of human stories, too. Like when he was talking about everything from medicinal marijuana to global warming, he brought it back to individual people.
He has a vibrancy, a youthfulness to him. He has a message which is largely cheerful. And what he lacks is fairly evident, which is a record, which is substantial political wins. He did beat an incumbent in his own party to get into Congress, but he obviously lost his Senate race.
That magical the thing that maybe you're right, Sam, is unfair, but it's not like we in the press created it. There's something out there that is magical.
You can teach message. You can teach policy. You can't teach charisma. And I think that's the thing that Democrats are reacting to. He's got a long road ahead of him. He's got to build an organization. We got to see what his policies are. But what he has to start with is a charisma that you just can't manufacture.
I think you just did, actually. And it's funny how they keep saying, you know, it's, you hear that thread as it's put together, you know, those comments.
I'm kinetic.
Yeah, well.
I'm kinetic.
Well, here's the thing, too. It's they're trying to justify their giddiness.
Exactly.
It's not like we're making this up. Actually, it's exactly like you're making it up. It is just bizarre. I saw two different interviews yesterday. I had the TV on in the background doing some reading. I had the TV on, and when I looked up, and I thought, because I got to go to CNN, right? I got to watch CNN and the interviews. And here comes Robert Francis O'Rourke up, you know, on the split screen, and then there's the anchor on the other side. There you have it. Big smile. There's the smile. Do they smile when they even get Ivanka Trump on? Forget about the president. We know they're not smiling when the president's on. Are they smiling with Ivanka Trump? Are they smiling with anybody from the administration? Oh, you know who gets smiled at a lot? Sarah Huckabee Sanders. They always smile at her, don't they bring her
I'm,
on?
I'm trying to think if there's anyone. Well, I'm trying to think. I mean, probably the person who, to me, garners the most respect would be a John Bolton or a Pompeo.
Right.
Nobody really messes with them.
And here's the thing.
Nobody messes
not
with
even,
them or,
not
or
even
smirks
I,
at them.
Not even I would smile around John Bolton. Look, we've had him on. I wasn't smiling then. I sat up straight and I asked very direct questions because I knew I was going to get direct answers. But and Pompeo. Our flagship station the other day had the Secretary of State on WBAP, and I thought to myself, and I wasn't there for that, and I thought to myself, man, I'd be sitting up straight. I would think that he's got drones hovering over me during the interview. But the point is that giddiness was everywhere. If Sarah Huckabee Sanders were a spokesperson for Beto yesterday, forget that she's ever been associated with
right.
Trump, and she was spokesperson for Beto.
Oh.
The CNN anchor would say, before we get to the questions about Beto, I just have to say, I tried your pecan pie recipe, and it was awesome. And today's pie day, because yesterday was 314, today's pie day, I just had to get that in. I love your recipe for pecan pie.
When I heard Chris Matthews first say, he's kinetic.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, let me just look up all the variety of different definitions for the word kinetic. And when I got to the art of the motion.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh God.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what he's,
yeah.
The art. So even in his motion, there's an art, there's a symmetry to his motion. And this is because he flails his arms all around the place. Mm-hmm. But I just, you know, I've said this about O'Rourke before, because we have followed him. He doesn't say anything.
No.
He's not a deep person at all.
Right.
As they even admitted, he has to tell us where he stands on the issues.
Yeah.
I mean, he's running for president of the United States. Well, we still got to find out where he stands on the issues. But the kinetic energy, the art of the motion, the symmetry that he has, the joy. He's a happy guy. And he was very happy, even though part of the review from Piers Morgan is, this guy is dark.
Yeah.
All he's telling people and telling future generations is, you're doomed. Piers Morgan called it the "we're doomed" candidate.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you look at this and I just get the biggest kick out of Chris Matthews when he gets excited over nothing. You know, he gets that smile, that weird, that creepy smile that he has.
Yeah.
Talking about the absolute imagery of somebody, nothing based on substance at all.
Right.
Just the imagery, and the imagery is even contrived. That's why I liked what I saw yesterday on Twitter, where apparently all this one comedy group put together this thing about he is not a good skater.
Yeah,
that was that was wonderful as they went through his techniques of being a poser when it comes to being a good skater.
Skater Bob.
It honestly is hilarious watching the giddy behavior.
Skater Bob.
See, if you're going to do the dance club version, you know, because we've got to be hip. It's got to be Skater Bob. Well, here's what's funny is during those comments you heard, well, you know, I mean,
so
it's going to take more. He's going to have to put an organization together, and he's going to have to put out his agenda. Okay. So you know. Here's what happened yesterday.
Good. Explain to me, would you please?
Yeah, here's what happened
yesterday. I need to know.
Robert Francis O'Rourke announced that 1 year from now, roughly, he will be dropping out of the race for president of the United States. I'm wondering, too, by the way, you look at the... So we'll go on the theory of, all right, the Hispanic vote in Texas, right? The Democrat vote in Texas. But he has a significant Hispanic following. So, although there is a Hispanic from Texas in the race, you have to keep that in mind. All right. Now you look at if that is the goal, if the left, if the Democrats are trying to raise money, he can raise money. If you're trying to make Texas blue and get the votes there, but you're also trying to boost the Hispanic vote, not just in Texas, but in other states. Because keep in mind, the president, as of late, the support among Hispanics has grown for President
Trump.
Yes,
it has.
So that's not nothing. So I wouldn't be surprised if a Joe Biden picked Beto. And there's a couple of things there. You go either for Kamala Harris. So, you know, you're saying, look, she's the future of the party and the future of the country. And one day she'll be president. We'll have the first female African-American president. Or you look at the pulling power in the demographics that you need and in the fundraising of a Beto, and you pull him on board instead.
All right. But then you have Biden and O'Rourke, or do you, in the mind of the political consultants of the Democrat Party that say, look, you've got to bring Beto in as a vice president. And what you're going to say, because the criticism is going to be from the left of our party, what? Another two white men running? And we blunt that by stating, nope, Beto identifies as Hispanic.
Well, here's what we could say.
Can we get to the first election where transracial is now accepted by the Democrats, where you can't call him a poser?
Yeah.
You simply say he identifies as Hispanic. Therefore, he is.
I think probably not quite that far, but he is embraced by the Hispanic community.
Here's the thing, though. He blew that yesterday. Mm. He said he understands if you don't support him because of his skin color, because he's white.
Wait a minute. You're saying he's white?
He said that. Robert Francis.
Oh.
Not Beto, but Robert Francis said that yesterday.
Yeah.
He said, he's already starting his apology white tour.
Okay. Well, I guess it's over now. Can you imagine?
I'd hate to be a Democrat.
You got to jump through
so many imagery hoops.
Think about the beauty. Think about the actual saying it out loud effect. An old white guy is going to be the nominee, and next to him on the ticket for Veep is a guy who calls himself by a Hispanic name, but his last name is O'Rourke.
Will he be charged? When is he going to be charged with cultural appropriation from the far left?
Ooh. Well, you know what? Ocasio-Cortez, she wouldn't hesitate.
You're right.
She's not running for president.
This has been just an awfully fun week, Eric.
There is not enough time in the day. We need to push for a 10-hour show.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold and snowy weather doesn't just affect your fuel. It also affects your fuel's filtration system. For diesel engines, fuel filters are the last line of defense for dust, dirt, and debris entering the combustion cylinders. Cold weather will only make matters worse. Any major drop in temperature can cause your fuel to gel and clog your filters. If you're having issues with your fuel system, try changing your filter. You should also be changing your fuel filter during every maintenance check. And it would be wise to keep an extra filter in your cab this winter. You never know when you may need it. If you need help changing your filter, stop into TA Truck Service today and let one of our expert technicians assist you.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Just very quickly, a couple other things. Hallmark Channel has severed ties with actress Lori Loughlin. So, and completely, even past projects, even past movies, they're not going to show anymore.
Yeah.
We wondered how they would react, and you know. I mean, their image is squeaky clean.
Well, their first reaction the other day was wait and see, but it quickly became something else when they started hearing about the allegations. And one of the things they cited was she doesn't have her passport. She can't get back to Vancouver. That's where the work is done. And the other thing, too, is you don't want that. You are building that image on squeaky clean. I mean, that's their image. And if you're doing something working against that image, and I know she needs her day in court, that's all fine and well. But they're an employer. And they likely have a clause in those contracts.
And golfer Phil Mickelson said he used that same college consultant, but they didn't break any laws.
Mm. Yeah, that's an interesting story.
I know, it really is. We'll see how that develops.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.